Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm caffeinated.
Good.
You know?
Me too.
I'm ready to go.
Me too. We've got some Reddit stories for you today.
I know. I do. I love a batch of short stories. They're always fun. I caught a glimpse of the first one and I'm very interested.
Yeah, I would say these are quite creepy today. So,
what thread did you pull them from?
We've got mostly Let's Not Meet, which is our typical, our go-to, but I also have Creepy Encounters in there as well.
Okay.
And it's living up to the title. They are really, truly creepy encounters.
Fair enough. Maybe I need to get more on Reddit. I'm a YouTube guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I wasn't on Reddit for a really long time, but over the past couple of years, I've definitely been more on it. And there's some crazy stuff on there. Who knew?
Who knew?
Most people, I would say. Most people knew. I did
ben
not.
Knew.
Yeah.
Oh, but well.
We're here now, and I've got plenty of stories for you just in this episode alone. So
let's do it.
Okay, great.
Without further ado, do we have a Patreon plug or something?
Sure, why not? We always do that at the top. Bonus episode number 49 is out now over on Patreon. When this episode comes out, I'm sure there will be a poll coming out soon. I don't think it'll be up quite yet, but there will be one coming out soon for bonus episode number 50.
There's always a poll.
50 bonus episodes that will be up soon. Isn't that exciting?
So many episodes.
Yeah, so if you like us and you want to binge 50 episodes that are just like the ones that you get over here, head over to Patreon and you'll get 50 more, and they're great. Honestly, some of our best, I'd say. Like, we have, because they're ones that the people vote on, so it's the ones that really everyone wants to hear, and they're some of our most crazy stories, I'd say.
I know. I'm usually kind of surprised at what people choose too.
Yeah, there's some really fun ones over there, and we've had some really interesting conversations. So if you're interested, head to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast and check it out for yourself. But without further ado, why don't we get into our Reddit stories? This first one was posted a year ago on Let's Not Meet, and it is titled The Time I Was Hunted.
Okay.
Really casual stuff. Back in 1998, I was a pretty broke 19-year-old guy and living with a roommate named Steve. Steve was about my age, maybe a year older. His dad had died a few years prior and had left Steve a trust fund which covered all his bills and gave him a weekly allowance on top of it until he reached a certain age, at which time he received his full inheritance. Steve and I got along pretty well, but he was the kind of guy who liked to remind you if he had some degree of power over you.
The best type of people.
Yeah, not great.
Like, hey, I can be shitty to you. Remember that.
Right. That aspect of his personality butted up against my own stubborn, prove the world wrong attitude on a particular night leading to the events I'm about to describe. Steve and I went over to a friend Trevor's house on Siesta Key one night. Steve drove as I didn't have a car. I don't remember why we went over there, and I don't even know that I really remember any other instance of the three of us hanging out. I just know that we went there later in the evening, maybe 9 or so. At some point, Steve and I got in a disagreement over something. I have no memory of what it was about, except that I seem to recall it wasn't anything important that actually impacted our lives in any way. Something akin to disagreeing over a bit of some movie trivia or something as inconsequential as that. Steve must have felt that he was losing the debate because he took the opportunity to remind me that he had the car and I could always walk home. Now, there were a few things to note here. First, home would be a 13-mile walk. I could not have told you that at the time, but I just looked it up for this telling. Second, we were at my best friend's house. I had stayed over there countless times and absolutely could have that night. Third, my best friend also had a car and would likely have given me a ride. So Steve's threat was completely empty, whether he realized it or not. But what was important to me at that moment was that Steve, the trust fund brat, wanted to exert control over me because his ego was bruised. And I was a stubborn hothead who would absolutely not stand for that shit. So I silently decided that I would walk home, just to fucking spite him and show him that I wouldn't be intimidated. This is some shit you would do.
I was just about to say, I respect the fuck out of this. Like, I would totally find myself in this situation. especially just because of who this person is described to be,
mm-hmm.
who Steve seems to be.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just almost everything you would hate in a person. It's like entitled, was handed everything, didn't work for it, and then wants to exert power over you. Like, you know?
Yeah, that's a shitty thing to do for sure, but he got it because his dad died. So I let's give him a little grace, you know?
I know, but yeah, I'm not connected to Steve at all.
Right.
I mean, I completely understand losing your dad is horrific.
But that is a shitty thing to do.
At the same time, yeah. I mean, he's just being shitty. Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't have to work.
Yeah, he's being a shithead.
There's a whole other level to it.
Definitely. And point being, this is exactly something that you would do. If in this scenario, you would get up and walk home, even if it was 13 miles away.
I was like, well, we're running a half marathon today.
Pretty much.
Especially if I had a couple drinks.
Oh my God, yeah. So a bit later, under the pretense of going to use the restroom, I left the room and quietly left the house and started the 13-mile walk home. I should note that while I knew this was a long walk, I didn't quite understand how long it was. But it didn't matter. I needed to prove my independence. It was probably 11 p.m. or so when I left the house. I anticipated that they'd come looking for me when they discovered that I had left, so I tried to stay off the main path as best I could, determined to make the whole walk in order to make my point.
Okay, let's do a little math. Best case scenario, you walk a mile in maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Best case. Probably more like 20. Call it 20. 13 miles times 20 is over 4 hours of walking. Probably like 4 hours, 20 minutes. So he starts at 11. He's not going to get home until maybe like 3:34.
Right.
Unless he starts jogging.
Right.
Which might be an option.
Maybe.
But still, this is a long walk, dude.
Yes. This may be a good place to remind you that this is 1998 and a good 2 or 3 years before I got my first cell phone. The first hour and a half went by without incident. I made my way all the way down to Sarasota. The more direct route would have been to follow the main road along the waterfront, but I cut through downtown, still looking to avoid Steve spotting me on his way back home. This is an area I was super comfortable with. I'd spent most of my childhood in the area, and especially in my teen years, had explored every nook and cranny of the downtown area. It was also a pretty affluent area, full of high-rise condos that looked out over the Gulf of Mexico, and known for theater, opera, and art galleries. As such, even past midnight, it didn't feel menacing at all, just quiet and empty. The path I'd chosen through downtown went along Pineapple Avenue, which was mostly art galleries and upscale shops. As I walked along, I saw a red hatchback sitting in the middle of the road, just a little way past an intersection up ahead of me. I noticed it had no license plate, but didn't think too much of it. I figured it was a quote-unquote tag applied for kind of situation. As I got nearer, the car remained stopped. The interior light was on, and I could see there were 3 or 4 guys in there. The interior light being on made me assume they were looking at a map or something, though I couldn't make out the inside of the car well enough to see anything more than the general shapes of the people. As I crossed the small intersection, maybe 30 or 40 feet away from the car now, I suddenly got a really uneasy feeling. I don't know if the car was still for just too long or the figures inside too still or what. I suddenly got to feeling very ill at ease. So instead of continuing on, I casually turned down the left side street, and as soon as the corner of the building blocked me from their view, I bolted. This was a spot where a small access road ran behind these buildings and then connected to an alley, and then another, very thin alley that ran alongside a church and ended back on Pineapple Ave, right where the red car was. I ran this sequence of alleys and popped out just in time to see the rear end of the car vanish down the side street I had run down.
Uh-oh.
At this point, I wasn't scared at all. I had the idea that the guys in the car had something unpleasant in mind for me, but I knew damn well that I had given them the shake. There's no way in hell they'd expect me to be back where they started. If they were looking for me, it was going to be elsewhere. So I continued along, feeling smug. After 10 or 15 minutes, I pretty much had to get out on the main road, because the alternative was walking through a seedy neighborhood that I wasn't nearly as confident about as I was downtown. As I approached the first big intersection along the main road, I saw the red car again up ahead, noticeable by the lack of license plate. I kind of grinned to myself about having foiled them. On this big road, there were some other cars here and there, even at this late hour, so I felt less isolated and more at ease. Until I saw the car slow to a crawl, despite not being anywhere near the light yet. Suddenly, I found myself wondering if they might have spotted me again, so I decided to just cross to the other side of the street. It's a US highway, so it's several lanes wide, with a median down the center. Being on the other side would put me a fair distance from them. But when I got to the other side, that's when I realized I was in actual danger. This red hatchback suddenly sped up, racing to the intersection ahead, and zipped over into the left lane, where it banged a tire-screeching U-turn to head back in my direction.
And we're crossing the median again.
Where I had crossed was a nice green space between the History Center and the Garden Club, where a gigantic tree stood. I think it was a banyan, but I could be mistaken. On the other side of that green space was a parking lot, some buildings, and the bay. I wasn't familiar enough with what was back there to be able to pull a trick like I had before, so I climbed. I got as high into that tree as I could, as fast as I could. I always dressed in all black back then, so I was pretty confident I'd be nearly impossible to spot, as long as they didn't actually climb up after me. So I got up and nestled into the most hidden spot I could and tried not to make any noise at all. Hiding up in the tree, I was so surrounded by foliage, I couldn't see what was going on. On the plus side, that meant they were really unlikely to see me. On the other hand, I didn't know what to prepare myself for. So I sat up there, running through scenarios in my head, trying to plan my next move. Even if I hadn't been outnumbered, flight was really my only option. As speedy and scrappy as I was, at 5'3", no fight I'd put up was likely to do much good. As I sat on that branch trying to plan my next move, my blood ran cold. Any remaining doubt about what was happening, any fleeting hope that I was just being paranoid, flew out the window as I heard car doors open and close, heard footsteps in the grass, and eventually, an angry male voice say, "Where is this motherfucker?" followed by a, "Look over there, I'll check this area." It was official. I was being hunted. I don't know how long I stayed up in that tree. I can't have been up there for more than 10 minutes, and more likely it was quite a bit less than that, but it felt like forever. At some point, I decided to risk another flight, though I can't remember what triggered it. Car doors? The car driving away? I just can't remember. I do remember jumping from the tree and landing with a hard thud and bolting back the way I had come, as fast as I could. Terrified that whatever sound made me feel like it was safe to come out of hiding had been a ploy to draw me out. At the intersection where they had made the U-turn was a 24-hour gas station, of course, across both roads. All I could think was that if I could make it inside, I would be safe, and I could call the police. That run is a total blur, but I remember going through the door. I remember the look on the clerk's face as she saw my panicked expression. I called the police and explained what happened, and I waited inside for them to arrive. When they got there, I went out to meet them, and explained everything to the only officer who actually spoke to me. He was not sympathetic. I had described the car in detail, as well as all the events, and he said they probably thought I was a male prostitute and were trying to pick me up. I thought to ask him if prostitutes get a lot of business by fleeing from prospective Johns and hiding in trees, but I was distracted by the sight of the red hatchback slowly cruising by, watching me talk to the police. I pointed to the car and exclaimed that that was the car. The police seemed entirely uninterested. He glanced at the car for a half a second and looked back at me and said, "What do you want me to do about it?"
Go arrest them. That's what I want you to do.
Right. "I don't want to walk anymore," I exclaimed. I'm sure there were better ways I could have articulated that there were people attempting to capture me for unknown nefarious purposes and that I was in fear of my life should they encounter me on the street again, but "I don't want to walk anymore" was all I was capable of in that moment. The cop pointed to the side of the police car and said, "You see what it says there? It says police, not taxi." His condescending attitude was doing a great job to replace my fear with some of the brash attitude that had gotten me into this situation in the first place. So I replied, "It also says to serve and protect, and I'm asking you to protect me because I think I'm in danger." He gave me a sigh like a teenager asked to do the dishes, and told me that he can't take me all the way because I lived in the next town and county over, but that he'd take me to the county line, which is another major intersection along that same main highway. That was still a good 5.5 miles from my house. Again, a number I just looked up for this telling, but got me off the road for another 3 miles and made it less likely these people would find me again. The cops dropped me off in front of the museum, and I walked another 2 hours or so, looking over my shoulder constantly, ready to run down side streets or jump into the bushes if need be. My girlfriend's house was slightly closer than my own, and the sun was now rising. I knew she'd be okay with me stopping in. In the end, I made it safely, and never saw that red car again. Almost 30 years later, I still sometimes wonder what might have become of me if they had gotten their hands on me. The determination they showed in pursuing me leads me to believe that nothing I can imagine, no matter how bad, is outside the realm of possibility. So, hunting party in the red hatchback, let's not meet.
Yeah, wow. What a story. I mean, I can't believe he actually walked, like, what, 10 miles home, almost?
Yeah, around that.
Yeah, and I truly don't know what they wanted from him. I'm like, they just want to, like, rob him, or...
My thought was, like, it could have been a gang initiation.
Yeah, I guess it could be that.
Like, they could have actually killed him.
Yeah.
You know, like, sometimes gang initiations are like, you need to find someone and kill them.
Fucking wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he made it out, so we're very glad.
Right.
But
definitely.
Jeez, this is terrifying.
So scary. Because you want to think that you're being paranoid and like, oh, they're not actually chasing me, but... To the point where you're up in the tree and then you hear them actually looking for you, you're like, oh, actually, I can't pretend like this is not happening anymore.
Well, you knew they were looking for you as soon as they turned down the side street that you went down.
Right. No, totally.
So,
but that,
by
like,
that point, it was really undeniable.
Yeah. But as soon as you hear them actually stomping around in the grass looking for you and talking about it, like, that 100% makes it very real. And then the cop.
Yeah, the cop is the cherry on top. Like, I understand that, I don't know what you would arrest them for, but yeah, the fact that you're so bothered to do your job is incredibly annoying.
Yes, and rude.
Like, yeah.
This person is telling you that they almost got, like, kidnapped and potentially, like, killed.
Who knows?
Who knows? Like, you really don't know, but these people were not, like... chasing him down for any good purposes, right? And he's like, that's the car right there. Can you please just, like, take me somewhere else? And he's like, it's not a taxi. It's like, okay, what? Like,
yeah.
You're supposed to protect me.
What else are you doing?
Yeah, like, you're supposed to protect me from the bad guys. Or what else you got better to do right now?
Right. I mean, I wonder if he just decided that he was, like, gay or something and didn't want to help him. He's like, oh, yeah, you look like a male
prostitute,
escort.
Yeah. Or, like, sex worker.
In what universe did you pull that scenario out of your head? Like, what about this situation made you think that it makes no sense?
I guess because it's, like, really late or really early in the morning, you know, like the wee hours of the morning. So who knows?
How many sex workers are out there?
I don't know. You know, they were in, like, a...
Running away. I mean, even if he was, you're not going to protect him? Like, what do you mean?
Oh, I totally agree. That doesn't make him less worthy of protection.
Yeah, also, but there's, like, there's nothing, there's no evidence of that happening at all, other than it's late.
Right.
What do you mean? It's completely unfounded.
Yeah, it seems like that cop was just a jerk, and I don't know, but... Yeah, he made it out of there and was able to walk to his girlfriend's house.
Walk 5 more miles.
Yeah. So insane. And yeah, he said it was, what, 98? So he didn't even have a cell phone yet for another 2 more years.
Yeah, truly insane. Yeah, I have, here's a personal story. I've run home from a bar. I pretty much did a 5K home because I wanted to. And the closest Uber was like a half hour away. And I was like, I think I can make it home before I even get picked up here. So I just did it.
That's precisely why I said this is something you would do.
Yeah.
Also because in college, when we would be out and about, Alex would just disappear because he liked to run away.
I like to be independent.
Yeah. So this is...
It's also a drunk walk, a drunk wander. It's so fun.
And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a drunk one. You just like a wander.
That too.
Right.
Just walk around.
Yeah.
Very much relate to the personality here, and I'm glad that you made it out.
I agree. Anyway, why don't we move on to the next, because this one is also creepy. Spoiler alert, they all are, but...
Really?
Let's move on. This next one was posted in Creepy Encounters and is titled My Hills Have Eyes Moment in Texas.
Okay.
In 2010, I was driving from New Orleans, Louisiana to Eugene, Oregon. It was just me, 24 female, and my 2-year-old pit bull in a 14-foot U-Haul truck with everything I owned crammed into the back, a fancy flip phone, and my printout of MapQuest directions.
I love this vibe. Moving away, a new beginning, and a pit bull in the next seat.
Yeah, with printed out MapQuest directions.
Great moment.
Yeah, I don't miss that.
Oh, MapQuest? No.
I mean, we didn't really have to deal with it too much. I feel like that was before our time mostly, but I do remember having to like MapQuest things for sure.
Yeah, I was like 12 during this story.
I think the first smartphones actually came out around that time, but I didn't have one. Cell phone service was also much spottier, and there were long stretches through the desert where I had zero service for hundreds of miles. I was driving a lonely stretch of highway through central Texas when I realized I hadn't seen a town or exit for a very long time, and my giant U-Haul was really low on gas. Just when I started to freak out and seriously run out of gas, I see a small town coming up. I pull into this town, and it is tiny. I was so worried about other things that I never did pay attention to the name of the town, but there were only about 6 streets in the whole place. I go gas up and am ready to get back on the road. Except I cannot for the life of me find my way back to the highway. I circle the town about 4 times and start getting so frustrated because this is such a tiny town. How the fuck can I not find my way out? I can literally see the highway, but I can't get to it. I return to the gas station to ask for directions. Now, when I got gas, I paid at the pump and never went in. When I enter for directions, there's a skinny, nondescript guy who had black hair hanging down in front of his eyes that looked like it could use a good wash. He's not particularly creepy, but a little rude. He never really met my eyes. He was looking down at a magazine. He gives me directions that don't sound right at all. He's telling me to take a road that will get me to the highway in about 17 miles. For a moment, I am dumbfounded. Then I point out that I didn't drive that far to get from the highway into town. Why so far to get back to the highway? I can literally see it from the town. He is so casual, almost like I'm just an annoyance and can follow his directions or not. Why should he care? He gives me some explanation about the road curving around that doesn't really make sense. He still doesn't look at me. Just, whatever, I gave you your directions and waved his hand in the direction of the door. When I got into the parking lot, my whole body started trembling violently, and my heart started racing, seemingly for no reason. I get into the truck, and as soon as I put the key into the ignition, I burst into tears. I had the most terrible feeling. No matter how nonchalant he acted, this man had bad intentions. I didn't know what, but I knew right then and there was no way I was going to follow his directions. Yet this was the only store in this little town. Short of knocking on doors, no thank you, there was no one else to ask for directions. I decided I didn't give a shit if this town seemed like something dropped out of the Twilight Zone. I was going to drive around until I found my way out, even if it took me all damn night. Then, a big red beater of a pickup truck, as much rust as metal, pulls up and disgorged the quintessential Texan man, huge, husky, and in flannel and work boots. Without thinking about it, I jumped out of the truck and approached him quickly yet warily. Looking into his eyes, I saw a kind human being, or at least I was hoping I did. I asked him if he could please give me directions to the highway. I told him I knew it was silly, but I just couldn't seem to find my way back. He looked concerned as I was visibly upset. So he made me laugh and very cheerfully gave me directions for a hairpin curve turnoff right at the end of a small concrete tunnel I had passed several times. He said it often confused travelers because it was so hard to see, they really needed to put up signs, etc. With a sinking feeling in my stomach, I asked him how far in miles was it back to the highway. He laughed and gave me a funny look. Miles, miss? I'd say it's a quarter mile at most. You can see the highway right from here. At this point, I couldn't help it. I had to know. What happens if I drive? And I gave him the directions the man in the store had given me. Texas looked at me very intently and asked me how I knew about that route. It was pretty far out, and usually only locals knew about it. So I told him. He was quiet for a few minutes, and then asked what the attendant looked like, and if I had a map of the state. Nope, just my MapQuest, which wasn't helpful in this situation. He goes to his truck and grabs a raggedy local map from his glove box. Spreading it out for me, he traces the route I described. The way the man from the gas station had told me to go led me away from town, away from the interstate, and led to seemingly the middle of nowhere. Texas told me that the road did go about 17 miles right before it dead-ended in the desert. I asked him what was out there, and he told me that it was nothing but some junked cars and a few trailers and mobile homes, all owned by the same family. This family was known locally as troublemakers, meth heads, and alcoholics, and these were the nice things townspeople had to say about them. And the clerk was part of this family and lived down that road. I'll never forget the look in Texas's eyes as he told me this. He also told me that I was smart to listen to my instincts, and he told me to be careful traveling out there. I don't know if the man from the gas station wanted what was in the back of my U-Haul or what was in the driver's seat, but thankfully I didn't have to find out. Oh, and I learned that sometimes angels look like ruddy-haired Texans with scruffy faces and rusty pickups. Thank you, random Texas stranger. You really saved my ass, and I will always remember you with tons of love. Sorry I didn't ask your name. You're forever Texas to me now. And that's the story.
Well, amen. I mean, it makes you want to go back in and bitch slap that guy.
Oh, scary.
Yeah, terrifying. Yeah, I mean, he's sending you to go get mugged or killed or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, and to do it with such, I mean, to do it at all.
Robbed in the best case scenario, you know?
Yeah, robbed in the best case. Yeah, and then, you know, you just really need a good person at the right time.
Yeah, 17 miles out into the middle of the desert.
Yeah, I mean, you'd really be fucked.
So scary.
Yeah, I mean, thank God that guy was nice, you know?
I know. And I can't imagine what it must have been like for him, like, hearing her say those directions. She's like, oh, I was told to go this way and then travel 17 miles down this road. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
Why? Like,
who told you that?
Yeah. And then him knowing that this family probably owns this gas station and the kid inside is the son or something, like he is that family.
Yeah.
Oh, so gross.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you're so vulnerable. It's like your entire life is in the car.
Yeah. She's just like traveling alone.
I know, dude. When she was like, I can't find my way out. I've tried a bunch of times. And now I get this weird direction. I get a horrible feeling. And now I still don't know where to go. I have no directions, no map, and no way to get out.
No cell phone service.
I'm stuck and I'm fucked.
Yeah, pretty much.
So shout out Big Texas. I mean,
yeah.
It's certainly like he was wrapped in a package that, I don't know, maybe I wouldn't be too open to, but he seemed like he had a heart of gold.
Yeah,
that's just Texas.
There's them good people out there. Bless their hearts, you know?
Bless his heart.
For this next story, we are going back to Let's Not Meet, and it is titled The Day I Was Almost Murdered While Hiking on the Natchez Trace. So this is kind of a long story, but I'll try to keep it as brief as I can while still including all the relevant info I can still remember. I was 15 at the time. I live in the South in a town that was built along the Natchez Trace. For anyone who doesn't know, the Natchez Trace is a very long stretch of road that runs almost the entire length of the United States, north to south. It was used by tribes way back when to quickly get around the country for trade, and during the Civil War was used by both Union and Confederate soldiers for travel. It is federally protected land now and feels very isolated. No one is allowed to build anything within about a mile of the trace, and there are no streetlights, just a two-lane road. There are burial mounds, even unnamed Civil War graves, and lots of offshoot hiking trails. It is extremely illegal to dig up anything, etc., in my town. It isn't uncommon to go hiking out there because it's absolutely gorgeous. But there were stories about being careful. I remember in the 90s, a young woman was killed out there while hiking. And there were all sorts of boogeyman stories about not being out on the trace after dark. Hiking the trace was something that me and some of my friends used to do a lot when we were young. We used to go off trail often because you can find some really cool stuff back there. One day, me and a buddy were out there going through some trails and checking stuff out like we always did. It was in the spring and not quite summer, but the days were starting to get longer. It wasn't super late, but later than we were usually out, just barely dusk. We were about an hour or two into hiking and had gone off trail like usual. We come up on this break in the trees that opened up in this big open field, and there's an old truck out there. That alone was a huge red flag, because you can't use any vehicles off-road there. But there were two dudes next to the truck with shovels and enough dirt next to them that you could tell they'd been digging a pretty big hole for a while. The bed of the truck was open, but we couldn't see inside it from where we were. They looked up at us, and there was this weird second or two where no one said anything. And I don't remember who moved first, but I remember the dudes both jumping into the truck, starting it up, and driving full speed toward us.
Uh-oh. Not away.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We ran back into the trees in a panic because we thought for sure they were going to run us down. I remember hearing the truck stop at the trees behind us as we ran, and hearing them get out yelling. We ran for what felt like a solid couple minutes before we jumped into a deadfall of broken trees and just stayed as quiet as we could. We could hear them a ways off, and could hear dogs barking as well, like they had dogs with them. And I specifically remember hearing one of them yell at some point, "I can't see you, but I can hear you, and my dog's gonna get you." We just stayed quiet and didn't move, because we never heard them get close enough that we thought they'd spot us. Eventually, we heard the truck start again in the distance and stayed out until we couldn't hear it anymore. And then we carefully walked back to the car without saying a word. I remember the whole ride home, we were quiet, and every pair of headlights we saw made me almost have a heart attack because I thought it was going to be them looking for us. I never found out what they were doing out there, but it must have been something bad. When I was younger, my brain always went to the obvious cliche, like someone hiding a body, mostly because it would have been a good spot to do it. No one looks for stuff out there. But as I got older, I began to think that it was probably either dirty money or drug stashes. The town is also small enough that I've always wondered if I ever ran into these people again out in public and just not known it, getting groceries or running errands. How many times have I been a car or two behind them at a stoplight? To this day, it gives me the willies.
What a great phrase.
That's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, man. To pull up on something that you shouldn't be seeing in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And like, you're already spotted.
Yeah.
Like, they see you, you see them.
Yeah, they were in the middle of a clearing. Like, it was a field.
Yeah. I mean, there's no plausible deniability. You can be like, oh, I see what?
Yeah, I don't see you. I see nothing at all.
And yeah, I mean, if they're really doing something like hiding a body or drugs or dirty money, like, the calculus is to kill the witness.
Yeah, they can't have witnesses.
Right. So, yeah, it's a lot to realize in one moment when you make eye contact with somebody.
Right. Two people and dogs, apparently. And they were 15, the kids out there who were walking around.
Wow.
Yeah. They're just like out on a walk, just like looking in the woods like they usually did.
That's so terrifying. I mean, you're just a kid.
Yeah.
And you're just in the wrong spot at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
They did well.
Yeah, they really ran away
and hid.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the dog didn't find them.
Well, it's like, what were they supposed to sniff?
Right, I guess they didn't get close enough for the dog to like really...
Well, I'm sure they could smell them, but it's like, is the dog trained to do that? Like,
right.
Even the police dogs, you need to give them something to sniff,
yeah.
To smell. So, I don't know. I'm assuming that they don't hunt people regularly.
You'd hope not, right?
You'd hope not.
Yeah.
So hopefully, luckily, you know, the dogs were just like, I don't know, can you think about this from the dog's perspective? It's just like a fun.
It's just a normal dog.
A fun thing. Like, where are we going, boss? Like, where's the bird? Where's the toy?
Right.
You know?
Well, I hope it was just like a chill dog. But also, if they were criminals out there hiding a body or drugs or whatever, like, it could have been like a attack dog.
Maybe. I don't know, there's especially like in crime shows, there's always like such a duality with some criminals and like an animal. Mm-hmm. Like they treat the animal so well and then they're
just
a shitty human being.
Right.
So it could be that case where the dog is like completely pampered.
Totally. Yeah, but I mean even if they have a dog that they're using as like an attack dog, they're still gonna take care of it a lot of the time, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like highly trained, but like still pampered as hell.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting into the weeds. It doesn't matter. But
to
yeah,
be a crime dog.
Yeah, oh, to be a pampered crime dog in the woods searching for random people.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. Oh, to be hunted.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Anyway, on to the next.
Let's not meet. Yeah.
This next one is also from Let's Not Meet, and it is titled, My Stalker Ended Up Killing Two Girls.
Ugh.
This story happened in Ohio in the 80s. I was a teenager long before cell phones existed, living with my parents near Columbus. I don't know where the first time he saw me was, but the first time I saw him was through our kitchen window. Hey, hate that. We had a pop-out greenhouse window, and it was late at night. I was getting a glass of water, and all the lights were off, and I happened to look outside and saw a figure of a man outside of the window. I froze and just went back into my room because I was so scared and acting like nothing had happened. It may seem crazy I didn't do more, but this was not the first time that I felt someone was watching me. For weeks before that, I knew someone was outside of my bedroom window. We lived in a one-story house that backed up to a park, so anyone could go past the back of my house to the main street. It wasn't unusual for people to be around. For weeks, late at night, I would wake up with the strongest sense of someone watching me. It was summer, so the window was open, but I had blinds blocking my view from the outside and a screen to keep the bugs out. After a few times of waking up like this, I started to hear someone touching the screen, like running their fingernails across the mesh. This happened two or three times a week, and sometimes I would get the courage to run to my parents' room, but by the time we went back, he was never there. They really didn't believe me either. This became an almost nightly thing, and I knew I wasn't imagining it. So when I saw him outside the window, it was almost a relief, because I saw he was real, and I wasn't imagining it. This went on for months until finally it started to snow, and then there were footprints visible outside my window. So my parents at least acknowledged he was real, but didn't really do much.
Are you kidding me?
And then in parentheses it says, remember, this was the 80s. Then it all
what
came
to... No. You don't get away with that. It was the 80s.
It was. Are you...
Yes, it was. But was it acceptable to have somebody like trespassing on your property at night for your child? Outside of your child's window.
I guess it was a different time, you know?
What do you know? No.
Don't yell at me.
No, I mean, I just think that these specific people are just not getting the message.
Listen.
It was not the time.
Here I am delivering you the facts.
You're arguing with me about what the 80s were like. I'm like, there's no way this would have been like something you just go, oh.
I don't think I would be chill about
it. I'm
going
to call my mom after this. We're going to ask, okay?
I'm going to call my mom on you.
I'll call my mother on you.
I'm not saying that I am going to be chill about this or would have been chill about this. I'm simply reading you a Reddit story, my guy. All right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the narrator's like, oh, it was the 80s. I'm like, this should have been alarming in the 80s. This is my point.
Okay. Can you at least acknowledge that like things that are extremely alarming now would not have been as alarming in the 80s?
Yeah.
Okay. So the parentheses, remember this was the 80s, is relevant.
No.
Okay. You're just being a jerk. I'm moving on. This all came to a head when I was home alone with a couple of friends getting ready to go out. My parents were away at dinner, so we had the house to ourselves. The blinds were up on one of the bedroom windows, and as I turned around, he was standing directly in the window staring at us. He was a scary-looking guy with bright orange-dyed hair. Holy moly.
That detail is a carrot on top.
Okay, carrot top.
Come
love
on.
It. This time...
I'm sorry, you need to cut that.
I'm not going to.
So terrifying. It's such an extra detail that like makes my skin crawl.
Like it shouldn't be worse. Right?
Well, like, it's like anything outside of the ordinary, like if his hair was dyed green or purple or red, it would be the same thing.
Sure, right. But like that's my point, is like it shouldn't be worse that he has like an unusually dyed hair. Like he's just still a man standing outside the window, but the fact that he has bright orange hair somehow makes it worse.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Okay. This time I screamed along with my friends. We ran into the bathroom, which didn't have any outside windows, and I finally got up the courage to run to the kitchen and call 911. The police came at about the same time my parents got home, but there was no sign of the guy. The police basically accused my friends and I of drinking and making the whole thing up. A few weeks later, I happened to see the newspaper and stopped dead in my tracks. There was a picture of the guy on the front page. He had attacked two girls in a gas station and ended up killing them. The police had shot and killed him when they were trying to detain him. Honestly, I can't remember all the details and haven't been able to find the article since. I remember feeling shocked and relieved that he wasn't coming back. So, guy with the dyed orange hair, let's not meet.
Well, you won't meet. God, that is... Could you imagine reading that?
No.
And, like, he's been at your house multiple times.
For months. For months, he would stand outside of her window, which was open, by the way, with just the screen, and he would stand there and watch her basically sleep at night and run his fingernails along the mesh of her screen. He could have come inside, probably.
There was nothing stopping him, really.
Really, yeah.
Wow. And then her parents didn't believe her, and then neither did the cops.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking, even for somebody who's told these types of stories for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, I feel like the 80s of it all is showing in like the parents and the cops just not believing her because she's just like a kid, you know? Because I feel like these sorts of stories and things, like we've heard so many of them now, and like that we have like social media and like true crime is such a big thing that like we've heard so many instances of this that like you'd probably believe someone if they were like, yeah, there's someone standing outside.
Yeah, I mean, but even if you don't immediately, like when you see the footprints, there's no denying it anymore.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't deny that anymore. I guess, yeah, that was the part that they should have probably been a little bit more concerned, because like, there is a man standing outside your daughter's window and you should do something about that.
Right. Your child's safety is absolutely in question.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
But I mean, a different time.
Twas a different time. Also, like, how many people? There's like hundreds of millions of people in this country. It's like, we're going to hear about the most lax parents. Like,
sure.
There's so many different types of people.
Yeah.
Like, eventually, there's going to be people who just like, because, like, there's always like an instinct, I feel like, when you, it even happened for her, where you kind of are confronted with undeniable evidence that you're in danger, but it's not like immediately a problem, you know?
Sure.
So you just kind of ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
There's always like an instinct to ignore it if it's not like right in your face, like he's running at you, you know? He's just standing there. And if you just ignore him, maybe he'll keep standing there.
Well, it's a lot. Sorry.
And if we just ignore it, maybe he just won't come back, you know?
Yeah.
There's always that instinct. And I guess some people will just give in to that instead of doing something about it.
Yeah. It is a lot easier to ignore a problem than to deal with it.
Absolutely.
What I was going to say. So, yeah, I'm sure that's what they just wanted to do, was hope it would go away.
They're like, yeah, I got to go to work on Monday.
And they
what
did.
Am I going to do? Install a ring?
In the 80s?
It's in the 80s.
They can't do that. Also, they probably were like, oh, we do live right by a park. So maybe just someone walked by, and maybe it isn't anyone actually doing anything wrong. Maybe they just walked by.
Maybe they just stared at our daughter at night.
Right. Yeah, that's no problem.
People do that.
Yeah, that's normal. Anyway, let's move on to the next. This one is titled, I'm Confident I Would Have Become a Missing Persons Case. To better paint the picture, here is a description of myself at the time of this incident. 5'5", 26-year-old woman, medium-length bleach blonde hair, curvy 175 pounds, wearing black high-waisted tights and a pink crop top. 3 years ago, I was walking home late at night from my friend's house. It was dark, and at the time, I lived in a rough part of a large city. I've had many sketchy situations that I've gotten myself out of, so I guess I felt sort of invincible, like nothing truly scary could happen to me. When I walk alone, I always stay very alert and aware of my surroundings for my own safety, just in case. About halfway home, and roughly 10 minutes to my apartment, I noticed a van started tailing me. I was used to this, since in my city it's very common for a young woman in a rough area to get propositioned for sex. It's embarrassing how desensitized to this I was. I did my usual and crossed the road so that I would be walking beside the traffic heading in the other direction. I wasn't scared, just annoyed. The van then turned down the side street, then back onto the road I was on, and pulled up to me. At this point, I still wasn't scared. Again, this has happened so many times, and it never mattered if I was wearing something that showed more skin, or if I was wearing a winter coat zipped from just below my chin all the way down to my ankles. That area is notorious for that type of activity. I decided to be firm, and told this person sternly, "I'm not interested." I noticed there were two men in the van. They looked almost identical, and may have been twins or brothers. Both men had very, very dark complexion, dark eyes, and short hair. The van didn't move. I was super annoyed and crossed the road again to get away. At this point, I figured this would be enough for them to stop following me. They didn't. They kept circling back every time I crossed the road. I've never had to put that much effort into getting a horny pervert to leave me alone, so this is when I started feeling unsafe. They zipped by me at the speed the traffic was flowing, and I yelled for them to fuck off. I thought it finally worked. It had been 3 minutes and I hadn't seen the van, so I thought I was in the clear. Just in case, I pulled my phone out and was getting ready to call my sister that I lived with. Just then, the van pulled up to me very quickly, and before I could even blink, one of the men jumped out of the van, opened the back door, and approached me quickly in an aggressive manner, as if he were about to scoop me up and throw me into the vehicle. The traffic in that area is very inconsistent. It was dead, and I imagine that was what they were waiting for. Just as the man was about to place his hands on me, I tilted my phone and said, "You are being filmed in my live video chat. I gave my friends your license plate number and the police have been notified." I was so scared, but I didn't let that show. I stayed as calm as I could. The man paused like he was considering if I was bluffing or telling the truth, so I tilted the phone more as if to give the fake audience a better look at him. He then jumped into the van and they sped off. I have never been the same since that night. I'm afraid of walking alone now, even in the daytime. Stay safe out there. Two creeps in a van, let's not ever meet. I hope karma finds you both soon.
Wow. Yep, every story makes me progressively want to own a gun more. It really does.
Yeah, that's
because
quite scary.
If they don't go away and you just pull up with the click-clack, I mean...
Yeah.
There's not going to be a problem if you point a gun in this motherfucker's face. God. I'm just saying.
Right. Well,
you
she
know what
was
I mean?
Very, very smart to point her phone at him and say, "I have you on live and my audience, you know, knows who you are and I have the police notified as well." It is a very powerful tool.
Yeah. I mean, get on the phone with somebody, have 911 dialed. I mean, yeah. I mean, you got to protect yourself, plain and simple.
Yeah. Whenever I would walk alone somewhere, or even when I was like in an Uber or something. Well, I guess I wouldn't be on the phone in an Uber most of the time, unless I was like feeling unsafe, but.
Right. The Uber, you can see your route and then they have like safety features for it now.
Yeah, but Uber can still be creepy sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Like there are so many unsafe Uber stories, but this isn't necessarily about Uber. Like when I am alone or walking alone, whatever, I do tend to be on the phone because it's just like a safety thing.
Yeah.
And she was about to call her sister, but
she was totally bluffing.
Oh, absolutely. She was totally bluffing. But the fact that she thought about doing that quickly and saying that is so smart. I don't know that I would have thought of that quickly because think about how quickly you have to react in that moment. Like that van screeches up to you and a man jumps out and is like running at you basically. And you have a millisecond to react. And that's what came out of her mouth.
Yeah, well, it was the right words,
yeah.
The right tone.
So smart. So, yeah, I think that's a good one to keep in the back pocket, you know? It's a horrifying situation, but this is, like, unfortunately the world that we live in. And, like, for a woman walking alone in this world, like, this is not a scenario that is unheard of. People run up on you. And this is a powerful tool that we have as, like, our phone, you know?
Yeah.
And social media and whatever. So saying like, I have my Instagram live right now and thousands of people can see your face is not a small thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to keep in mind because I don't know that everyone would just like think of that immediately.
No.
And if you have nothing else, like if you don't have pepper spray or you don't have like a gun or a knife or something to like physically protect yourself and you're against two men in a van.
Yeah.
It's like you use what you got.
Yeah.
Very smart. This is our last one of the...
This is our last episode. No. You're canceled.
No.
You're canceled.
No, this is our last story of the episode. It is titled, "A Stranger Has Been Breaking Into My Basement for Months, and My Roommate and I Are Gonna Let Him."
What?
Oh, are just gonna let him.
I need to hear.
Right.
I'm just processing what you've just told me.
We're just gonna let him.
Okay. How did she get there?
Right. Or he.
Or he. I don't give a shit. How did they get there?
Oh, it is women. Yeah.
Bro.
All right, this has been...
Did I not just talk about the instinct to do nothing?
Yeah.
Like, this is the epitome of that.
It is. It totally is. All right, this has been a wild ride, but I am happy to say that as far as I know, he is apparently a sneaky fella, so take this with a grain of salt. This guy hasn't come back for about 8 months, so I think I'm in the clear. Here's the story.
Oh my God. Well, he hasn't come back for 8 months. During the entire time, I've been terrified that he might.
Right.
He probably won't
come back. I think I'm
in the clear.
So here's the story. So about 2 years ago, my 20 female and my close friend, 20 female, moved into a rental house in a mostly safe city. House is nice, rent is expensive. Landlords forget we exist. Perfect. A few months later, a super sweet family, mom, dad who's a police officer the next city over, and two young kiddos move in. This is relevant. The house that we live in, I still live here, has a partially finished basement, mostly underground, outside access only, with a couple windows. I say partially finished because the owner told me that a tree fell on the house several years ago and the foundation was built around it. So there is just kind of a big gaping hole in the back of the basement. Basically, a huge crawl space. The basement is really creepy, has juggalo graffiti, all kinds of random holes in the walls. We never put anything in there besides a few little Christmas decorations and an old recliner I need to get rid of. And because of that, never felt the need to lock it. In the basement is our hot water heater and a random empty one, not attached to anything that the landlord said has just been there. Another note, the yard is fenced in, and I have a dog who goes between outside and in through a doggy door while we're at work all day. He's a mini Aussie, is a threat to no one, and trusts absolutely everyone. He will bark at first, but if you don't hurt him and say a few nice words, he would hand you the keys to my house, car, and safety deposit box if he could. Perfect.
Right.
The opposite of a guard dog.
Well, a warning dog.
Sure, kinda. In the yard, there is an empty chicken coop left from the owners before the current owners. So not my landlord, but the guys before him. His chicken coop. Both of these things are relevant, I promise. So one day, a few months into living at this house, I'm getting out of my car after work, and neighbor guy, the cop, comes up to me. He tells me that a man in a red truck pulled into the driveway and started trying to get into the backyard. Obviously, my neighbor knows that is not myself, my roommate, or my boyfriend, so he asks him what he's doing. He tells my neighbor that he wants to look at the serial number on the hot water heater in my basement? Slay.
Okay.
Okay. My neighbor tells him to go away and come back when one of us are home, because he is a nice neighbor and doesn't know who this dude is trying to get into my yard. Now, my landlord drives a red truck. So at this point, I'm thinking it was him and just forgot to let me know he was coming. So I send him a message. It was not him. I have some back and forth with landlord and neighbor, and we determine that the man was the owner of the house before my landlord. Let's call him Jim. Once we figure this out, landlord tells me he'll get a hold of Jim, figure out what he needs and why he was at the house, and we'll go from there. Landlord cannot get a hold of Jim. He does not come back. That is, for several days. Until I am at work one day, in my car, on my lunch, and my doorbell camera goes off. I open it, say hello, and there are two detectives from a different state knocking on my door. Who are they looking for? Jim. Why are they looking for him? Oh, only because he has warrants for stolen guns and other illicit substances, and my house was an address they had on file. I quickly fill them in on what happened, and they immediately were suspicious that he had hidden something in the basement and was trying to sneak back to get it. I traded numbers with the officers, and they told me to put a lock on the basement door, because who knows how long he'd been crawling around in there before my neighbor caught him. Fence is short, and we don't go in the basement a lot. There are big, 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 and I mean big, spiders in there. In the time it takes for detectives to organize local officers to come search the basement, Jim makes two more appearances. The first is on my camera. He rings the doorbell and bangs on the door. The camera is almost dead and doesn't alert me until later, and the images are grainy and discolored, but you can see his face and the red truck in the background. The second is to my landlord. Jim supposedly tells my landlord that he was trying to get the chicken coop out of the backyard, which is not at all what he told my neighbor. Shortly after, I come home one day, the basement door is now locked, and the door to the chicken coop had been opened and rifled through. Now I know my little Aussie ain't doing that. Nonetheless, detectives come and search the whole yard and basement area, including the crawl space, and find nothing. I sign all the documents, made a couple of friends in a few counties, la-di-da. Landlord comes to take the chicken coop. We think since there is nothing in there, all is well. Well, I live in Tornado Alley, so we get some nasty weather. One morning, my roommate and I are out with the dog after a storm. Not a big one for the area, but decent wind for sure. And we walk around the side of the house. My roommate looks at the house, then looks at me and says, "Has that window always been busted in?" It has not. Jim strikes again. I unlocked the door and went inside. In parentheses, smart. Furious that Jim has the audacity to come back months later. All of our things had been rifled through and moved. Recliner shifted, tubs opened and decorations skewn about, and that damn empty hot water heater was moved around also. Myself, my family, my work bestie, my boyfriend, and detectives all dug through the basement at this point because we thought we'd find something. But I guess this guy can hide his stuff pretty well.
Wait, so this is something that he himself hid?
Yeah, I think the cops are thinking that he hid stuff in the basement.
Well, it's kind of seeming that way.
Right. So after realizing that the basement was obviously gone through, I called the local cops. Out-of-state detectives can't help unless local cops are involved, so we've been taught, so my friends in another county are not aware of this. Cop shows up, tells me busted window was from the wind from the storm, puts it back up, and leaves. Ignores my stuff thrown around and the fact that my basement has been broken into before. We got hit by a tornado a few months later. Tree fell onto the yard. Windows were fine. But yeah, you're right, the wind broke into my basement. Anyway, after that last excursion, my roommate and I kind of came to a few realizations. A, he can't get into the house unless he squirms through the tiny doggy door. And at that point, I would just be impressed by his effort. He doesn't really seem interested in the main house, just the stuff he needed to come back to get to that he hid. B, the local cops aren't helping, so there's no need to cause a tizzy. C, he probably got what he needed out of the basement the last time anyway, so ideally he will find another place to stash his stuff. D, we don't have anything valuable in the basement. If Jim wants my Nana's old Christmas ornaments, he can have them. E, he hasn't let the dog out yet, so clearly either my dog likes him and won't leave him alone, or he's jumping the fence and enduring my Aussie's endless barking and nipping and trying to herd him to his favorite patch of yard. Either way, Jim is not winning there. So pretty much, this guy has been breaking into our basement, and the last time we tried to get help, it was a waste of time. So, Jim, please stop stashing your scary bits and bobs in our basement. I'm just a girl. But obviously you don't want to hurt us, so just don't go into the house and don't take my dog. You'd bring him back real quick anyways.
Wow. That is how we got there.
Yep. So they came to the conclusion that Jim isn't really doing anything to them, and there's nothing down there for them anyway. So they're like, listen, Jim, we don't want you down there, but if you're going to go down there, fine, just leave us alone.
Right. Well, I mean, kind of what else can you do?
Right.
Actually, I mean, you could probably do other things to try and make it harder for him to break in. But unless the cops catch him, he can kind of come back. Like, you can't watch the house all day and all night.
Right.
You have to go to sleep.
You could probably install cameras in the yard and like get proof that he's coming and going and then give that to the local police.
I don't know what they did, but I would start filing police reports.
Right.
Like every single time he came by. And yeah, probably set up a camera, you know, have that ready to go. Be like, hey, he's here. Come get him. Come get him now.
Yeah. It seems like at the time they posted that Reddit, it had been 8 months since he came through. So, like they said in the beginning, they're like, fingers crossed, he's just done.
Right.
Bye, Jim.
Yeah, that's crazy they never caught him. He seems like so uncareful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad they were fine. And this seems like they were kind of unbothered in some way.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem sinister towards them. They're just like, okay, I guess he's in the creepy basement that we never go in anyway.
Right. That is what they came to, I guess. But
yeah. I mean, imagine your attitude when you were 20.
Right.
I probably would have came to the same conclusion.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to deal with it, I guess, at a certain point. Although having detectives from other states knocking on your door with warrants for this man.
Yeah.
For whatever it was. I think it was like firearms. I don't know what it was, but
yeah, like stolen or illegal possession.
Something like that. That would be a little uneasy, knowing that this man could be in your basement at any moment stashing something or just hiding down there. Like, who knows? That would not make me feel safe in my home, you know?
No.
Yeah, so
no, it would not.
Yeah, so I would probably want to get him out, but at this point there isn't much they can do. Like they're not going to go down there themselves and pull him out.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's not like hiding down there typically. He's just kind of like hiding something and then leaving.
Right.
So it's a tough situation. They're like, we're just kind of hoping he leaves. And then it seems like he did.
What did the cop say when they called and was like, hey, can you do something?
The cop was like, oh, it was just the tornado that broke your window.
Yeah, I would have been like, can we be serious? Can we be professional right now? Like,
let's be so this for real.
Can we be so for real? Like, do I need to become a problem for you?
Right. Yeah, because it wasn't just the broken window. It was also like all the stuff that was
She said, yeah, I guess the wind broke into my house. It's like, this is clearly ridiculous. Could you like do what you're paid to do?
Right.
Like, is it that hard?
Yeah. So tough, but hopefully Jim doesn't come back. And it seems like they're young and maybe they'll move out of there. You know, yeah, maybe this is just a temporary situation anyway.
Yeah, I would probably be getting out of there.
Yeah, I'd probably ASAP. Probably be moving myself if Jim is not going to be leaving. So that is what I would come to probably. And that's really all I have to say about that. But that was our Reddit episode this week.
Shocking title and understandable ending.
Shocking, shocking stories, I'd say. I think this was a pretty, pretty spooky crop.
Yeah, I mean, this crop was not spooky. It was terrifying.
Yeah, unsettling.
Yes.
A lot of hunting going on.
Yeah, what the fuck? It makes you think that this is so common, right? Right,
yeah.
I just got to remind myself that this isn't happening to everyone all the time. No. You know what I mean?
Yeah, keep in mind, I did scour Reddit for quite some time and did specifically pick these stories. So I did have like a theme in mind.
Right. So, yeah, but I mean, when you hear four or five of them back to back, you're like, yep, it's going to happen to me. You know what I mean?
Right. It's not the most settling crop of stories to hear all at once, which is why at the end of every episode, we talk about something good so that we can go back to our days as normal. So why don't you tell me your good thing so that we can feel less creeped out and unsettled? We can go back to our normal time.
Absolutely. That is maybe the best transition you have done in the history of this podcast.
Thank you so much. It's almost like I've done this a few times.
Tip my cap.
Yeah.
My good thing is going to be small.
Okay.
And it is a raspberry almond scone.
Ooh.
That I had this morning.
Yeah.
From a coffee shop. It's my favorite one, and it was very good.
It was a really good one this morning.
You corroborate this?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So sometimes the scone is just that good.
It really was. Honestly, raspberry, almond, anything.
Yeah, it's an elite combination, but not one that's too common. So I appreciated it. And what is your good thing?
My good thing is that I made a new friend and we bonded over crafts.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love a good craft. I'm not good at it, but I appreciate the process.
Yeah. We went to a little craft store and it was great. You know, making friends at this age is kind of hard. Like in your 20s, it's like weird to make friends, especially on like those apps, you know, because it's like you're really like literally going on a date, but you're not. It's like a platonic date.
Yeah, but it's a date where you don't want to have sex with them. It's very strange. Right.
Quite literally a platonic date. And so you have to get over that like weird, like we're planning a date, but we're not going on a date. And we don't know each other, so like this is strange. But it went really well, and we've been chatting, and we've hung out a couple times, and we are going to be crafting soon in the next couple days, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, shout out friends.
Yeah, shout out new friends. Putting yourself out there, it's good. It's good to put yourself out of your comfort zone because sometimes you get some good out of it.
It's true. Go outside.
Yeah.
Touch a grass.
Yeah, touch one blade of grass.
Touch a friend.
And then you, well, don't touch a friend.
Shake their hand, okay?
Yeah.
Relax,
platonically
okay?
Touch a friend.
Relax.
Yeah.
Get out in that world.
Yeah, touch
Do it.
One blade of grass, and then you'll probably want to touch more grass because it's good.
Yep, and then get back inside.
And then go back inside.
Go back inside and lock the door.
You're in timeout.
Lock the basement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lock your basement. Thank you and good night. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out all our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to nottodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have merch at nottodaypodcast.dashery.com. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is nottodaypodcast and a Twitter that is nottodaypodcast, but the T in that podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.